Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Hey, good morning and welcome to the show. It's edging up on 9:09 on this Tuesday morning. I apologize if you tuned in yesterday to hear me. I was out of town. I was up visiting grandbabies. I think there are some things in life worth missing a little bit of work for here and there. And visiting grandbabies, Vic Iverson is here, as you know. Vic, pretty important stuff.
It is important. And, of course, yesterday was the holidays, so your listeners should have expected you to take a little bit of time
off. Except they know that not just town, anybody in radio, you don't get holidays.
That is true.
So you get like Christmas and Thanksgiving. Maybe
being in the radio business, that's a tough grind, you know. So,
how are things for you? You told me before we went on the air that you've got grandkids living with you. That will make you either feel really old, fat, really fast, or really young, really fast. Which one is it?
I think it's really young, really fast.
Well, good.
It's a lot of fun, and of course, a lot of families are similar to that. But lots going on. Just a couple things to bring people up to date.
You went right off to grandkids in a hurry there. I thought you were going to talk for a minute about the grandkids, Vic.
But... Oh, I could talk for quite a while.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
The fun little part is we have kind of what you'd call, it's a hobby farm, you know, so we have chickens and stuff. It's fun to see the kids out there chasing those around, except for, this will be my last thing on grandkids, is we have a rooster that's a little aggressive.
Oh, you got a mean rooster?
Yeah. That rooster is kind of the enemy, the nemesis of the...
We had a mean rooster back in the day when I was a kid, and I was maybe 8, which would have made my little sister like 3. Not much bigger than the rooster, and that rooster would chase her around and peck at her, and oh yeah.
It's funny, those roosters, how they are, but...
Does he know he's a future drumstick if he keeps it up? I mean, you need to explain that to him.
I have explained it to him, and one time I thought he was going to turn into a drumstick right then, but he did revive, and he didn't necessarily learn his lesson. If you ever looked at a chicken's head, they don't have a very big brain. So
no, they do not.
I'm not sure how good their memory is. Maybe it's sometimes like me, but you know, there's a lot going on in the county today. I just... kind of give people a little bit of a heads up. The Forest Service has let the county know that they are doing some controlled burns up around Pine Valley.
Uh-huh.
So people
are going to freak out and go, oh, there's a fire.
Yeah.
And this is on purpose.
As dry as it's been, you know, people would probably be very worried, especially had we not had the storm we just barely had.
Yeah.
But anyway, so if people see smoke up around Pine Valley, just know that it's a controlled burn.
That's good.
And those
hear.
Controlled burns are important because... By doing a controlled burn, it means we can reduce the fuel load so that any catastrophic fire that starts will be able to contain it better. So anyway, and staying on that side of the county, I know that some of the citizens in Vail and Brookside and those communities up along SR-18 probably experienced some of the closures because of the bridge repairs. UDOT did let me know that they've finished all the bridge repairs for now. It's interesting because a few years ago, they did a major kind of, you know, upgrade on the bridge. And then they went back and realized that those plates that they'd put in were cracking. And it was really, they had to go in and do some urgent repair on these plates. I'm not sure what engineering, if it was an engineering oversight or whatnot, but they did say that for right now, they're done. And they will come back in a year or so. And they expect the fix that they did to last about a year. But anyway, they did have to close it on a couple weekends, just barely. So
you say maybe in a year they might have to go back in again?
Yeah, it's my understanding that right now UDOT is they're going to come back and do some analysis. But the repair that they did, shutting the bridge down, should last for at least... You know, they think it's a couple of years. They'll be fine.
So when UDOT comes through as a county commissioner and says, hey, we're going to work on, maybe not the specific incident because it sounds like this was more of an emergency, but if they come in and say, we're going to work on this road, do you have any say on when and where they do that, or do they just kind of come in and tell you?
Well, UDOT tries to be, they try really hard to communicate with the local community. I would say our UDOT, you know, in Utah does an excellent job at being concerned about people's time and traffic. I have to compliment them. I mean, they just barely finished the Main Street off ramp there in Washington, and I drive that road every day. And they did a great job at keeping traffic consistent and going through those construction zones. You go down to Nevada, I mean, they'll have miles and miles of pylons and shutting it down to one lane of traffic. And then you'll get down there and there'll be one guy on a backhoe, you know. And, or sometimes yeah. you're wondering, are they even doing construction? Or are they just trying to, you know, congest traffic? But UDOT does a really good job.
You forgot about the eight guys leaning on shovels, too.
Exactly. Yeah. So in this particular case, it did come up kind of suddenly, but they were making calls to us. They were putting it on Facebook. They were trying to make sure that people understood. But it did kind of sneak up very quickly where they went out and looked, and it was the type of fix that they felt like they needed to schedule immediately.
Yeah, I was going to say, I felt like it was more of an emergency. Maybe that's not the right word, but an urgent need. That got taken care of, and certainly there are other projects that will
Well, for example, today is our monthly meeting of our local transportation planning group, and those are representatives from all of our cities. UDOT's there at the table, and then our local, what we call the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Authority.
Wow.
And they meet there on the third floor of the county building, and really there's an entire list of construction projects that go out, you know, 10 years. And there's always a discussion about what projects are coming up. And so there's the hope that communication from not only the cities, but UDOT will get down to the citizens. And the MPO just barely this last week did a transportation expo. Mm-hmm. If people are interested, they should watch for that. Yeah. So, yeah, you were there. State of the City was at the same time or the same day down at Dixie Center. And the hope is that the citizens will come and take a look at what the planning is going on and give input into it. So
it's kind of funny because I like to go to the Transportation Expo with three or four questions I have about certain areas. And I felt bad because I'll see some of my friends in one of the booths. And I'll kind of ignore them because they don't have the answer to the question that's foremost in my mind. And I'll go right to, you know, I'll go to UDOT or to wherever and try to get my question answered. And I hope I didn't offend anybody by walking by and, hey, how you doing? And kept going because I really did have some, I kind of get sometimes a one-track mind or in this case, a three-track mind, three questions I wanted answered at the expo. But it's a great resource.
Yeah. Well, you know, we talk a lot on your show and I know our citizens are concerned about the rate of growth that we have. It's tough for our cities and for UDOT to keep up with that. But I think they do a really good job, to be honest, kind of recognizing needs. People do need to know that there's kind of a science to the madness. Mm-hmm. In other words, speed limits, for example, are set after quite a bit of study on a road. You know, there has to be certain traffic flows that justify the expenditure for lights. And of course we're getting more roundabouts. I don't mind roundabouts. Some people despise them. I actually think what they really want to do is keep that traffic flowing. And so a roundabout is an easier way to keep traffic moving through and allow people to on and off ramp. But anyway, there's a lot of transportation planning that goes on in this county. It's important.
So. I do have one pet peeve with roundabouts is people that treat it as a stop sign. Mm-hmm. People go, they go and, okay, I'm going to come to a complete stop. I'm going to look both ways and then I'm going to go. I'm like, no, a roundabout, that's actually a yield or a merge, right?
Yep.
You merge into the traffic and there might be someone coming, but if they're not right on you and there's a slot for you to merge into, go ahead and do it. Don't stop and wait for them to go by. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. But, that and driving in the left-hand lane.
Yeah.
When you're not passing, yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could I bet your callers would all have a list of pet peeves and things that kind of concern them. But those are a few of the items that we have coming up. Of course, this year is the year before the 2026, right? So we've talked a little bit on your show about this before, but 250 years, America celebrates. America's 250. And so the county fair, the last half of the county fair this year, from Wednesday through Saturday, we're going to have, what we call, it's kind of like a colonial village out there, reenactors. It'll be great fun for the family. Sam Payne and in conjunction with others has written a pageant, celebrating the shot heard around the world, because the 250th anniversary of Lexington and Concord will actually take place this April. And so, on the 17th, I believe. And so we're going to have two nights of that. We have Lee Greenwood coming in. It was one of our concerts. We have
God Bless the USA.
God Bless the USA.
I already have my Lone Star tickets, by the way. I'm already on. Yeah.
So I'd encourage everybody to kind of stay in tune for that. It's going to be a great celebration, and as we kind of build up for the 250th anniversary next year. Washington County is America's county, and we are going to be celebrating like nobody else. So
I was wanting to talk. I know you're a big patriot and you're a big fan of our current president.
Yeah.
Do you have, I know this isn't a county issue, but do you have thoughts on what's happening right now with a lot, you know, Doge and executive orders and stuff? I mean, how are you feeling about what's happened in the first, well, it hasn't even been a month yet.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty excited about it, to be honest with you. I've often said that the greatest threat to America is the administrative state, the rise of the administrative state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, they know who, you know, we have these elections and we elect people, but what they don't often realize is that people can be in Congress or people can be the President of the United States, but the real power is wielded by unelected, unaccountable bureaucracies. And, mm-hmm. And so I just absolutely have been excited that we're going to go in and audit the federal government and ask serious questions about administration and rulemaking. And I think this is a transformative period of time. And this could really save our republic, because some people might think I'm talking too dramatically, but I don't think people appreciate how the power really is not in Congress anymore. It's in these large bureaucracies. In other words, Congress will pass a law and then thousands of rules will be made without the consent of Congress through a rulemaking process, and then you empower, you know, people to go out and enforce those rules that have never passed through the legislative branch. I'm 100%, if Congress wants to pass a law, then it's a bad law. Then the public will then, you know, through elections, resolve that. But if nobody's controlling the bureaucracy, you know, we're seeing the waste, fraud, and abuse that the Doge is uncovering.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Do you think that will touch Washington County some? I have a friend who works for the health department. There's a program called WIC. It's Women, Infant, Children. And it's basically to help provide healthy food for women, pregnant women or women, young moms, infants, and children. And it is a federal program, but it is administered locally by the county.
Yep.
And so I have heard there are people worried about their jobs in the WIC program, because maybe that's one of the areas that they find, so, you know, maybe wasteful or whatever. Do you see it touching locally, this you know, the swipe of the pen and the Doge?
You know, I'm very aware of WIC. I'm actually on the public health board, and I'm a big supporter of our Southwest public health officers and employees. WIC has been actually kind of going down a little bit for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I think WIC, to be honest with you, is administered the way that it should be administered. In other words, people come in, they go through a simple interview, there's a little bit of education, it's really about nutrition,
mm-hmm.
For young people. You know, at the same time, like, for example, all of the senior centers, a lot of what funds the senior centers are the senior nutrition programs, in other words, for Meals on Wheels and things like that. I think there is so much waste that is at a higher level, and in some of the things that the current administration is talking about is pushing those funds down to the state and local level to solve. And so I'm hopeful that what they'll do is take a look at the touch points of where it really touches people's lives, make sure that continues while they cut the waste from above, if that makes sense. So
it does. Yeah.
The WIC program in particular, I can tell you, has been a little bit in decline for a while. And it is like a funding line for the local health department, along with, people might not be aware, but the county pays out of the general fund about $6.75 per citizen for the other services that the public health department provides.
Okay.
So.
Okay. I have a couple of texts here. I don't know if you know the answers to these, but maybe you can at least give thoughts. Any updates on a potential 700 South exit? Do you know anything about that?
It's actually, I'm going to have to draw into my memory. So if my memory's false.
He's old, folks. No, he's not as old as me.
I will know later at our meeting at 12. It's my understanding that they are in preliminary design for that. Now, that's the one, I don't know if it's the 700 or the one down below it, but it is in design, I think, kind of the preliminary processes. Mm-hmm. And so it is continuing to go forward. And that's my memory from a meeting about a month or so ago. So
the other question, any way to stop the proposed I-15 sound walls that UDOT is proposing along 4th East and 9th South underpasses? I don't know that you know much about sound walls in that proposal.
So what was the question about sound walls?
Any way to stop the proposed I-15 sound walls?
Okay, so here's my understanding of sound walls is that the people right next to the sound walls,
they're the ones that get a vote.
They get to vote.
Yeah.
And so that there is a process built into that. I don't know how somebody who just, you know, feels like they look like a prison camp, should. It's mostly the citizens. If the person that gave you that text is directly impacted, they do have an opportunity to vote in process. I'm not 100% sure that the decision on those sound walls has been made yet. I know it's ongoing.
So let your voice be heard might be the best if you want it to be stopped.
So
I will say this, Mayor Staley let me in on the ones over there on the Main Street exit.
Yep.
He said, look, they take all the people that, like you said, live in that area and they give them a vote. And he said, in this specific instance, I'm not talking about 700 South, I'm talking about Main Street in Washington, he said 70% of the citizens said, yes, we do want sound walls.
Yeah.
So it might mess up your view, but it's going to be a lot. Anybody that's lived by a busy road knows that that's not a fun thing when you hear traffic all day and all night long. In my case, we lived off of 300 East in Washington for a while, and that's not a super busy, it's not a freeway, but we heard trucks and motorcycles all night long because we live right on that road, and it was frustrating.
Yeah. There's been a lot of discussion about the sound walls there in Washington and just kind of pros and cons of it.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of agnostic. I do think that they kind of close in the view. And anywhere you look in Washington County, we have beautiful views. And so none of the view is as good as, a sound wall can never make.
Right.
It does kind of take that view away. But there is a process, and I just encourage them to continue to kind of participate in it. On the exact sound wall, I know I've been in meetings where it's been discussed, but I can't remember where it is in the process. So.
I can tell you this. When we moved from that location off 300 East in Washington, our number one goal for a new home, we had three or four things. We wanted boxes we wanted checked. Number one was we want a place that's going to be quiet.
Yeah.
We didn't want a busy road. Ultimately, we chose the house we live in now because there's a forest park behind it.
It is
absolutely quiet.
Yeah.
And even though we're a mile and a half from the freeway, we can actually still hear some trucks occasionally.
Yeah.
We solved that by putting a pond in the backyard that makes white noise.
No doubt. So.
Talking with Victor Iverson today. So controlled burn up what is our name? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
By Pine Valley.
Pine Valley. Our citizens up there should see that probably. So.
Okay. Okay. And maybe they wouldn't be doing this if we hadn't had recent rains, you think?
Yeah, I'm almost sure they kind of wait for those rains. And speaking of rains, we did have a good storm.
Yes, we did.
We definitely need more water, more moisture here. That storm lifted us out of historic lows, but we're still really low. The good news is that people need to appreciate is that our reservoirs are where they should be. I mean, mm-hmm. we have, you know, I want to say that Sand Hollow is around 80%.
Yeah.
And Quail Lake is around 70%. So we are going to have drinking water this next year. Hopefully we'll continue to get some rain. The storm was, it did help out the Enterprise area, which is was just flatlining as far as moisture goes. And so this storm did give them a little bit of a lift. The Santa Clara is still pretty, is still in historic drought conditions.
Mm.
And so anybody who's has agricultural rights, you know, there's a possibility they're already talking to you about the curtailment of certain irrigation because we're at that point this year.
Wow.
It's been interesting because the Colorado River system is not as bad as we are. We're kind of in, we've had storms hit to the top of us and a few storms to the south.
Right.
We haven't got as much rain as we'd like. We're going to have beautiful weather over the next 10 days, but if you're worrying about water, you don't want to see beautiful weather.
So. No, beautiful weather is nice, but...
Yeah, it comes at a cost.
Yeah. So. I can tell you this. I was in, of course, northern Utah over the weekend, and their mountains are cloaked in white.
Yeah.
Pine Mountain or Pine Valley Mountain, depending on who you ask, yeah. Was not until this weekend. I asked my dad has a rain gauge that he keeps in his backyard, and as of I saw him Friday afternoon, he had 0.57 inches. That was before the storms were over. That was like halftime. Yep. So I don't know what the actual official numbers are, Vic. I don't know if you do either, but I'm guessing we had over an inch of moisture this weekend.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, the snowtail sites, like I said, we got some pretty good moisture up on the Kolob area. It was a good storm. Not as good as we would have liked, but it was a good storm. And, but we are definitely going to be in drought conditions this summer. So.
One text on the 700 South from the Transportation Expo. They're quoting Kevin Kitchen. Now, again, I don't know who this quote is from, but this yeah. Kevin Kitchen told them somewhere in the future we'll look at ramps. Talking about 700 South, we don't have that funded, and that will depend on how things work out regionally and if modifications at other interchanges help at all. Do you feel like, you know, I know this is a city thing, but do you feel like the exit of Main Street has helped alleviate Green Spring exit a little bit? Because that was originally the goal, right?
That was really the goal. To kind of give a second alternative. The Green Springs exit has some challenges that because of the businesses, the way they've built in there, it's just hard to fix that. And so that was the goal, is that the Main Street would...
Seems like it has a little, right? Eased it up a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I've heard we're getting a pretty decent amount of traffic on Main Street now.
Yeah.
So hopefully.
That's definitely the goal. And I'm kind of curious. We just barely cut the ribbon, what, a month ago?
Yeah.
So
quick, yeah.
It takes a little bit of time for people to readjust their traffic habits, so...
All right, I got to get a weather break in when we come back. Roy has a question for Vic about something we don't really talk about that much anymore. I'll clue Vic in during the commercial break. We also have a caller on hold, too. But got to get this weather break in. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Andy. Victor Iverson is with me today, the legendary Vic Iverson.
Good morning, Andy. Right? It's good to be here.
You live in Leverkin, right?
Yeah, I live in Leverkin on the east side.
I forgot that. We had a discussion about pronunciation the other day on the show and how Leverkin, there's actually the locals said that little, and it's not as pronounced as I just did, but they have that extra little mini syllable.
Yeah, Leverkin, yeah. We still don't know how Leverkin. We received our name. It's kind of
really?
One of those mysteries, yeah.
That's interesting.
I know that the historical plaque says it's an Indian word for beautiful valley. It's not a valley. It's a bench.
Well, it doesn't fit then.
yeah. So, you know, some people say it's just a bad pronunciation of the Spanish, the Virgin for the Virgin River.
Kind of makes sense.
You know, and so anyway, we don't know. If somebody has a good theory on that.
We might get one here in text line. Let's go to the phone line. I know Lisa's been hanging on, a good support. Hey, Lisa, how are you today?
Good morning, Lisa.
I'm well. I'm well, thank you.
So what's
thank
on your mind?
Victor. Well, it is the infamous Bloomington Roundabout. And I didn't know if Victor was up on that. But I try to listen to different things, but if I'm driving, I don't call. So I've actually pulled over. But I had to really laugh at the community Facebook post where they showed you how to get on the roundabout. Of course, they made the video probably at 10 in the morning, you know, and there was no traffic.
Yeah.
First of all, Andy, do you know what the speed limit is at that roundabout?
Actually, on the roundabout? Probably 25, yeah, I'm guessing.
That's why we can't merge. The speed limit is 15 miles per hour.
15?
Yeah, that sounds right, because if you're taking it to 25, you're still going way too fast. Yeah,
and there's only two signs that I've seen. No, they put up another one that have the speed limit, but it's so far away and so small, by the time you get to the roundabout, you're trying to go 25 so you can get around it.
Yeah,
and that's why, you know, the guy made a big deal about merging and not stopping. There are no merging signs. There's only yield signs. And you have to yield to the traffic, and that's why you have to stop. Anyway, that's my complaint. The roundabout wasn't designed right, and I live with it.
Well, you know,
I appreciate it.
I'll actually be in the room with people that can at least post that sign. Cameron Cutler from St. George and UDOT. I'm not sure who has exact jurisdiction over that roundabout. I think it's actually a combination because it's
not technically on the freeway anymore.
Yeah,
but
it's right there in the right of way. But I'll definitely pass that along because that is a good point that people need to approach a roundabout with the right speed to get through it.
It's, I know, maybe I was going too fast, 25, but I don't know. I just, that's usually the minimum speed on a lot of, you know, residential neighborhoods and stuff. So that's just the number I defaulted to.
Well, that roundabout is problematic because of the needed truck traffic that goes through it as
yeah.
well. So those trucks, yeah. they have a hard time staying in the lane.
Last time we talked about it, someone said a truck was going in the roundabout the wrong direction.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, imagine that. You're on that Bloomington roundabout and a truck's coming the opposite way. You're like,
that'd be insane. Yeah. So,
okay, Roy has a question for you. Ask Vic about the Lake Powell pipeline as we are not hearing much about it nowadays.
So the Lake Powell pipeline has been pushed back. I mean, at some point in the future, we will need a secondary source of water in Washington County. But there is a larger discussion going on the Colorado allocation. And I can tell you that I attended the Colorado River Users Association meeting. They hold annually in Las Vegas, Nevada every year. It's held like the first part of December. And there was a lot of discussion among the states, the seven states. And the lower basin, so you have to remember, I'll just give everybody a quick update on the Colorado allocations. They figured in 1922, some of the highest water years recorded on the Colorado, that the production of the Colorado could be around 14 million acre feet. So seven for the bottom, west, the lower basin, and seven for the top. Well, the lower basin over time ended up using about 8.5 million acre feet. And then in the meantime, California and Arizona and everybody grew tremendously. And so we've been trying to tell them, look, the river is not even producing 14 million acre feet. It's anywhere from 12 to 10 million a year. And you guys need to start curtailing your use. And they've been reluctant to do that. Slowly they've been doing it.
Nice way of saying it.
But every year, the upper basin, we have to deal with drought, just like we're dealing with this year. You know, we have to cut our use, and we've been trying to tell the lower basin. And it was a very interesting discussion where I felt like Arizona and Nevada and California all wanted a medal for curtailing their use a little bit. And at the same time, they want us to deliver to them 7 million acre feet of water every year, not just from Lake Powell, but at their point of diversion, which is a problem. So anyway, back to Lake Powell. Utah has water in its allocation on the Colorado that is above and beyond 700,000 acre feet of water that we are entitled to, that we can take out. But it's going to take an agreement between the states in order for this to happen. And so that's still ongoing. And so what we're doing right now, our 20-year plan does not plan on the pipeline coming in. What you will see is a focus on conservation, a focus on reuse. So every drop of water, you know, all of our wastewater will be treated, and then that treated water will be put back into what's called indirect potable use. So it'll go into our reservoirs, it'll go into storage. We'll do exchanges with agriculture, and then eventually that water can and will be treated for potable use. And so we went, there was a group of leaders that went down just barely to San Diego to take a look at the plants that they're building as they're moving towards what's called pure water, or it's this treated water. Mm-hmm. That'll get us about 20 years of use. But what that does is it really kind of hardens our water supply. And what I mean by hardening is we're going to have years like this year. We're going to have years where we're at historic drought levels. We need to have plenty of storage and reservoirs.
Right.
And then we need to make sure every drop is properly accounted for. And that's what you're going to see.
So, I have a philosophical question on this, and maybe you don't know the answer, but why is it easier to treat reuse water? We call water that has been kind of wastewater, mm-hmm. than it is to treat salt water. It seems like that salt water would be easier to make into potable water, usable water, than wastewater. It seems like.
Yeah, I believe it's because seawater relies on reverse osmosis, and then also the gravity. So basically, you treat seawater, and then you have to pump it wherever you take it. Where mm-hmm. where a lot of times you can you know that there's a big cost there, a big okay. energy cost. It's surprising to me, and of course our city folks will know this, is that there's actually a lot of for example, your wastewater comes in, you have filters and screens and stuff, but then you introduce a lot of microbacteria that eats and
right.
a lot of those, you know, things that are in that water and
good
helps
bacteria
clean it.
Eating the bad
yeah,
bacteria.
Yeah, some yeah. Mother Nature will help you out. But then eventually you have to end up in a reverse osmosis, and that's where you have these little filters, and it gets to the point where you have kind of a brine stream, which is a high concentrated stream of salts and
yeah.
stuff that you're taking out of it. So that brine stream is a little bit of, it's challenging. But I'll tell you what, our friends over in Israel have really mastered, desalination.
Yeah.
They're taking and cleaning up seawater and pumping it into the Sea of Galilee. They're providing water for their neighbors, for Jordan, and for others. And, of course, they're quite close to the sea, and we're not. So
yeah. I know Zach Renstrom one time told me, he said, if you could invent a way to cost-effectively make salt water, seawater, basically, into fresh potable water, he said, you'd be a very rich man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I don't have the answer to that, and I'm sure there are a lot of smart people working on that. But
yeah.
sounds like that is going to someday maybe have to be the answer.
Well, and we have a real challenge, and I've probably said this on your show before, but the hot springs that are between Lurken and Hurricane Tempe, they put 80,000 tons of salt into the river, which means that all of our irrigation water that is diverted at in the Washington Fields, St. George Fields area. Is not, we can't just use that as a potable source. And so there is a program, a federal program, the Colorado Desalination Program, that I could see us possibly getting some federal money to capture that water and clean it up. But there's some challenges to that and some
yeah.
things that we need to resolve. But it's not so much the water. There's only about 11,000 gallons a minute that come out of those springs. But it's capturing the pollution at the source, and then that other water becomes easier to treat below it. So,
good point. Yeah.
But anyway, we'll be working on that as well.
And, all right. Let's get a break in here. When we come back, we're going to ask about another one of our old friends. In fact, I got two new texts coming in, so we'll address those right after this quick timeout.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show
on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back, Andy Griffin Show. Vic Iverson here today. Vic, I was Friday, Valentine's Day. We did a lot of talking about greatest Valentine, you know, romantic yeah. songs of all time, movies and stuff. But I am because I am beholden to BMI, which they're the people that are in charge of music. And if I play more than 30 seconds of a song, we have to pay.
Oh, wow.
And so I would play the first 27 seconds. I played like first 27 seconds of four songs, and then had to cut them off because I knew, you know, the boss was like, we will absolutely not pay and stuff. And so even the Andy Griffith theme, you know, I can only play 30 seconds, and then I got to go. All right, question, more text, and thank you, everybody, for texting today. Been a busy text line.
Yeah, it really has. Thank you, everybody.
Let's start. We'll stay on the water topic. What happens to the water that Ron Thompson negotiated from the Green River that belongs to St. George, and then they added Flaming Gorge Dam? I don't know if that's part
absolutely.
Of it. Absolutely.
So really it was a part of that larger discussion I just barely had on Colorado and the allotment. So all water rights belong to the state of Utah, right? So and when we talk about the Lake Powell pipeline, the texter is absolutely correct, is that we really should call it the Flaming Gorge pipeline.
Good point.
Because that's where the water is impounded, and then the water will be let out into the Green River, and then it'll end up in Lake Powell where the point of diversion would be. And so the water rights that they're talking about really are part of that 700,000 acre feet of water that Utah is not using, that is a part of our state's allocation on the Colorado. So those water rights are still there. At some point in the future, Utah will need to put them to use, but it's a part of this larger Western discussion on the use of the Colorado.
It's easy for me and maybe others to say, well, they got more people and they got more expensive lawyers. They're going to win. We're going to lose eventually, Vic. Is that true?
There's some reality to that, you know, it was interesting to hear the commissioner of water from California. He was this young kid, probably 28 years old, and he was there with these older, more deliberate people.
Three kids older than him.
And he was kind of smug, you know, probably Nancy Pelosi's nephew, literally. And he starts popping off about, well, you know, the upper state, they need to, you know, quit building pipelines and golf courses. And I knew exactly who he was talking about. He was talking
aimed
about
right at us.
Aimed right at us. I think, though, that there needs to be there will have to be a discussion and an agreement between the states. And I have to hand it. I said this several times on your show, Andy, is that Utah recently, and I think people need to really give Governor Cox and his team credit. They have stepped up and for the first time, I believe, are really fighting and defending Utah's rightful allocations on the Colorado.
Yeah.
And so, we're going to have to, it'll be a part of that larger discussion. So,
all right, another text. Good morning. Has there been any progress on the Northern Corridor with the new administration?
Well, these are long processes, and we're in discussions right now. We have a three-pronged approach. And you have to remember that the Northern Corridor will be a UDOT right-of-way and a UDOT highway. And so UDOT and the state is a partner with the county. So we are continuing a discussion towards litigation with the expectation that we can get some issues resolved. And with a friendly administration, we could possibly get what we call a sue and settle. Basically, we could come to some sort of agreement in court. The reason that we want to keep that option on the table is we wouldn't want to just do something administratively only to be sued and shut down later. So we're almost trying judicial at one point. We do have some options where we'd like some more congressional clarification on the right-of-way. And then the third thing is to continue to kind of open it back up administratively. So we're working all three of those angles aggressively. If you've noticed, the administration is involved in a lot of things, and the Interior Department is just barely getting put back together under this administration. So we haven't had the person to talk to. In fact, the BLM director was just barely named. She still needs to go through confirmation. Kathleen Sigma, I think she's been over the Western Energy Alliance I've met her before. She's a brilliant lady. She's a doctor. But anyway, so we're working all three angles. And
are you optimistic?
Yeah, because I believe we have to be optimistic, right? In Washington County, I love our heritage. I love the stories of our pioneers and their struggles and how they overcame adversity. And I think here we have a responsibility to overcome adversity. This is something that I think has been is an adversity. But mm-hmm. if you're trying to get on and off at the top of Boulevard like I do every day, you appreciate that we're going to need that corridor. So
I just the other day I was in Washington City. I needed to get over to, you know, over here to the west side, and I, as I'm driving on the boulevard and thinking to myself, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
There has to be a better way than this.
Well, and I tell people, and I know there's people that live up in that area or people that are concerned about that beautiful area that it's going to go through. Maybe I channel my inner Trump and I just tell them it's going to be an amazing road. It's going to be a beautiful road. It's going to be a road.
It's going to be huge.
They're going to be excited to drive on. And I truly believe it. I believe it's going to be a road just like, you know, the Red Cliffs Parkway. Red Hills Parkway, when you drive that road, it just makes you appreciate where you live even more.
It does.
And it's a beautiful road. And I think the Northern Corridor, the part that's going through the reserve, the part that's kind of the point of controversy, is going to be beautiful. And we're going to build it, and it's going to be great. So
I look out our beautiful glass window here looking over there, and you go, Red Hills Parkway. It's right over there, but I can't even see it.
Yeah.
But if there's a Red Hills Expressway, oh, you're going to see it.
Yeah, hope. That's the thing, is the proposal that came out, and I could talk about it for a while on all the reasons it was wrong, but it would destroy a lot of things that you really like along there. It would take out businesses. It's completely unfeasible.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't solve a problem. That's the problem, is why would you want to do something like that that doesn't really solve your traffic congestion?
Yeah.
So
I think back, kind of chuckle a little bit, let's go back 100 years. Hey, we want to put a road somewhere, and the pioneers would go, yeah, okay, let's put a road there. But now, hey, we want to put a road somewhere. And they're like, well, we got to go through a 1,000-page report on this, and we got protesters, and we got, yeah, it boggles the mind sometimes, Vic.
Well, and you know, there was a deal that was struck, and a lot of people, I know a lot of our wonderful recreational listeners have been concerned about that Zone 6 that was set aside. And that was all part of that. Didn't have anything to do with the habitat. It had everything to do with that road. So once the road went off, then Sitla and others have said, well, we're going to open that land back up. People need to recognize the county did work very hard to get a win-win, only to be sued by Conserve Southwest and have that, you know, destroyed. So,
got a minute left, Vic. Anything coming up county-wise that we need to be aware of in the final 60 seconds?
Here? Well, we have a county commission meeting. Anybody wants to come talk to the county commissioners at 3:30, we have a half an hour. You can come visit if you have something that you want to come talk about. Obviously, we're going to be celebrating America's 250 years of freedom at the county fair. I'd like everybody to participate. And just don't hesitate to reach out. So.
And by the way, your Hurricane Tigers play Thursday at SUU in the state tournament, state quarterfinals.
Pretty cool. Go Tigers.
Yeah, go Tigers. Go Tigers and Flyers and Panthers.
They're all good. Yeah. They're all good. So.
Victor Iverson, again, County Commissioner for Washington County. Victor, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thanks, Andy. It's been fun.
Great to see you. We're going to step aside. Let's see. Tomorrow, Chamber of Commerce, Sean Christensen will bring a guest. Also, Dave Romer. And Mello's going to be with us on the show as well. I kind of wanted to get a woman's perspective on gun ownership and that type of thing. So that'll be tomorrow here on the Andy Griffin Show. Thanks, Vic.
Thanks.